This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome to the Rainbow Report. News, opinion, current affairs for the Rainbow community from Joy 94.9. Australia's only full-time gay and lesbian radio station.
Gay and lesbian radio station.
And now your host, Doug Pollard.
Doug Pollard.
News and interviews. Joy 94.9.
Well, good evening. Thanks to Chris and Cam for your drive factory. Welcome to the Rainbow Report, another election edition. This week I'm looking at a variety of things, including one of those should be an issue but isn't issues, gay conversion therapy. Earlier in the year, you may remember we talked about how we might put a stop to the dangerous and damaging delusion that sexual orientation can be changed. Much has happened since then, including the closure of the biggest ex-gay organisation, Exodus, and the feeling has been that the industry is dying, especially here in Oz. Or is it? Freelance journo Luke Williams isn't so sure. A raft of gay groups got together to ask the three main political parties for their policies on a range of issues affecting our community that also aren't getting oxygen. The results are now in. Coriolum reveals all later on the Rainbow Report tonight. And to round out the show, we're doing some more trips out into a constituency, so to speak. Today, we've a couple of candidates from Melbourne Ports. Last week, we spoke to out-gay Liberal Kevin Eckendahl. This week, here in the studio, I have Greens Anne Birrell and the Sex Party's Melissa Starr. Labour's Michael Danby was also invited, but his staff indicated he had other commitments tonight. But we kick off tonight with Luke Williams. Is praying away the gay dying out, or just morphing into new and perhaps more dangerous forms? The Rainbow Report covered this issue earlier in the year, since when the big gorilla of the industry, Exodus Ministries, has closed down. And the number of ex-gay ministries has appeared to shrink. But have they really gone away? Freelance journalist Luke Williams joins us on the line now. He thinks not. Good evening, Luke.
Good evening, Doug.
Now, you've found something like ex-gay activity going on in schools, haven't you?
That's right. I've been working on a piece for the Global Mail, which was published a few weeks ago, which is an independent investigative journalism site. And we discovered that there is a lot of promotion of ex-gay therapy within schools, particularly in Western Sydney. We looked at one...
Oh, there goes old Western Sydney again.
That's right. Today there's been the issue with Penrith and Tony Abbott and Assemblies of God School saying that homosexuality is an abomination. This particular school is called Toongabby Christian School that we're investigating, which is west of Parramatta. Mm-hmm. And there is a pastoral care worker named Hayden Sennett, who claims to be an ex-gay, who has been into that school on at least three occasions that we are aware of, including at a parent-teacher information night, promoting his message that homosexuality is a sin and an illness and something that can be changed under some circumstances.
Now, this is a name that sounds very familiar. Wasn't he involved in one of the big ex-gay ministries here, Liberty Ministries, was it
Liberty
called?
Inc. He's in fact just resigned from there. The resignation doesn't seem to be related to these revelations, however. His resignation may have something to do with the fact that he has some very extreme views related to conspiracy theorists and the Illuminati. And
oh, dear.
He links, in fact, people like Bob Brown and the gay agenda to the Illuminati. So it may or may not be linked to that. You mentioned that Exodus International closed down. Mm. That is true, but it's also important to remember there's a splinter organisation mm-hmm. called Exodus Global Alliance that is still in operation, which he has announced that he's now working for them in an unpaid capacity. And Exodus Global Alliance seems to be trying to take up the new mantle of the new promotion centrepiece of the ex-gay movement.
Yeah, because the Exodus that closed down was what you might call the head office of what was in effect a franchise operation. If we can call it that. The other arms of the ministry were pretty well independent.
Exodus International was kind of like the PR centre of it, kind of just promoting it, and then mm-hmm. they had various splinter groups who were not splinter groups, various groups working under that umbrella that were affiliated and actually doing the hands-on type work. And that's what Exodus Global Alliance seems to do. They don't do terribly much of the hands-on stuff, but they are kind of like a centre, a centrepiece for it all.
Okay. Now, one of the bits of information that was in your article rather surprised me. It said one in three gay or lesbian students attending Christian schools in Western Sydney have been exposed to an ex-gay or gay conversion message. That's a bit startling.
That's right, and this has come from long-term research from La Trobe University and a number of other universities across Sydney. At the moment, that the researcher working on it is Tiffany Jones, and she was finding that that has actually increased in those schools. Whilst it is decreasing more generally, we're seeing an increase in, and this is quite remarkable. This is staff at schools telling students in one way or another that their sexuality is not just immoral or sinful, but that it is can be changed under some circumstances, or at least that they should abstain or risk, going to hell in engaging the devil in some way.
Is this this therapy that's being offered, is this a commercial enterprise in the sense that are people being asked to pay to do courses and things?
Not really, no. There doesn't seem to be any financial...
Because that's the big difference with the American system, isn't it? Over there, over there it was actually a business.
Yes, well, it doesn't seem to be the case here. I think the people who are doing it seem to think that they're doing the right thing, but I think that particular trend of 33% of schools in Western Sydney, I think shows the difference here between the centre-right, let's say groups like Hillsong, who now say that they're no longer willing to engage in ex-gay practices because they think it's damaging, and the far reactionary right, on the other hand, who are very resistant to change and in some ways are becoming more aggressive. So the issue you raised in your introduction about what's going on here, it's contradictory in a way because, yes, there are less of them, but on the other hand, we are seeing them move more underground and become more aggressive and target schools
So what we basically seem to be seeing here is that it's the real enthusiasts, it's the real ideological warriors who are still left, who are now running the show, whereas probably the more moderate ones have dropped it or have dropped out, or and the extremists are taking over.
Yes, and I think those moderate groups aren't necessarily changing their tune on the question of the morality of homosexuality. They are changing their tune about the question of gay conversion and of gay change.
Yeah. I mean, the story they're now selling is one of, no, we can't change your orientation, but we can suppress it.
Yes.
Would seem to be, you know, we can teach you to sort of, you know, deal with your homosexual feelings, but not do anything about it. And create what I, a lovely phrase I saw the other day, create what are in effect situational heterosexuals.
Homosexuals by behaviour, but not necessarily...
Well, a situational heterosexual... Yeah. Well, if a straight man is in prison and indulges in homosexual affairs while he's in there, he's a situational homosexual. In other words, he's having sexual relations with another man because there aren't any women available. And what they're basically doing is taking gay men and turning them into situational heterosexuals. So they're putting them into situations where their only outlet is with women and therefore they're able to function sexually if perhaps it's not their ideal choice.
Yes. And who knows what they're thinking about while they're
well, exactly. I mean, you know, we don't know what the fantasies are, and this is we're probably supposed to be told to think about Jesus, which is another theological can of worms. I don't think we'd better get into.
We might leave that one alone.
I think we might. It got gay news in the UK into a lot of trouble all those years ago with the love that dare not speak its name and so on and so forth. You also said in your article and to me on the phone when we chatted that these groups are also now surfacing in Asia. They're kind
right.
of, if they haven't got a market here, they're exporting.
Well, I've used a lot of your research for my article, Doug, so... I wanted to thank you, first of all, for doing all that research and putting it on your website. And I chased up a lot of those groups that you have listed because keeping track of these groups isn't always easy.
No, they change all the time.
They change names all the time and a lot of them disband. But there seems to be only a couple operating here in Australia, and that's Living Waters Liberty Inc., Homosexuals Anonymous, perhaps, and Exodus Global Alliance. We've had a number of others in the last 2 or 3 years that have closed down, and it's hard to say where they're at. Those include Roundabout Ministries, who Adrian Rouse, who was a young man who started youth-orientated sexual purity nights. He's now working in Thailand. It is unclear whether his work in Thailand is related to ex-gay ministries, but it's certainly a social work type role with young male prostitutes.
Yes, I've been approached by a couple of people saying, do I know where person X is or person Y is, because they've heard they're now working in Bangkok or Phuket or Kuala Lumpur or wherever else. It does seem, just as the Americans have been exporting to Africa with this anti-gay stuff, it seems like our lot have been exporting to Asia. Look,
the other one, can I just quickly say, Nick Kuiper is another guy who's operating in Adelaide, and he's now working in the Philippines. He's employed by the Philippines to work in jails with young Muslims, where it is believed he is spreading the ex-gay message to Muslim Philippines. These are countries that often have questionable records on gay and lesbian rights.
Sure. Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there, Luke. Fascinating to know that this thing, this little virus, is now morphing into something else, and unfortunately, still around. But
can I just say, Doug, just for a little bit of self promotion, the Global Mail is a great site. it is at the Global Mail.
Of course, you can say that, Luke. The your bill will be in the mail.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Great talking to you, Doug. See ya.
Cheers. That was Luke Williams there, as you heard, writing for the Global Mail, which is an online newspaper. It's actually very good. It's similar in some respects to The Conversation. Now, last week we spoke to Kevin Eckendale, the out gay Liberal candidate for Melbourne Ports. He reckons he has a good chance of knocking Labour veteran Michael Danby off his perch, but that's also the ambition of my next guest, the Greens candidate, Anne Birrell. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Hello, Doug.
So, how's it going on the ground?
Very good. We're getting a lot of support as we go around the electorate. I think I was a candidate in 2010, and we're definitely getting a lot more support.
I'm hearing that there's been a bit of a late surge starting to happen towards the Greens from a number of people. Are you finding increasing interest?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The big issue people raise when we hold our street stalls is the state of politics. You know, people are really demoralised by the level of debate.
But a lot of people have blamed you for that. I mean, they blame the Greens for that.
Oh, not in Melbourne Ports.
Does the refugees issue come up a lot? Because this is one where, you know, the main parties, I don't wish to be rude, but they seem to be playing kind of dumb and dumber on that one. The Greens seem to be the only one who've actually sort of developed an actual policy as such. Is that playing well with the electorate?
Yeah, I mean, after people complain about the state of politics, the next big issue is the refugee issue. People are very concerned. They're concerned for the suffering of the individual refugees, but they're also very concerned at the way the whole debate's been handled.
Now, a lot of people have said that, you know, the Greens' refugees policy is perhaps too idealistic, that it would kind of involve giving up control of our borders. It would encourage more people to come, not fewer. What do you say to those people?
Well, we've got a well-thought-out plan, a regional plan that we've worked out by talking with experts in the area in Indonesia, Malaysia and Australia, people who are experts in the field. It's really based on what was done in the 70s and 80s after the Vietnam War. Look, there's no easy answer on refugee policy, but we feel we've got the right balance.
So you that's one part where you do agree with everybody else then, that it needs to be a regional solution. It's not something Australia can do on its own.
No, I think there are lots of small initiatives we need to take. I think we need to... Greens would increase our humanitarian quota for starters.
Yeah.
We'd work we'd take in some of the backlog from Indonesia and Malaysia.
I was going to say, you've got a kind of two-stage problem, haven't you? You've got the immediate crisis at the moment, which is the big backlog of people stuck in Malaysia, Indonesia, places like that, and you've got to kind of clear that to sort of relieve the pressure, as it were, by some means or another. And then you've got to get a long-term solution in place as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a gradual process. There's no silver bullet. We'd increase funding to the UNHCR for processing, and we'd work with sort of genuine regional development in the area, even looking at getting our neighbours to look at the Refugee Convention.
Mm-hmm. Got a specific question sent in to me by Tess here, not about refugees. Can you ask about my old chestnut, getting full Medicare coverage for those living with gender dysphoria, including gender reassignment surgery? What's the Greens' take on that one?
That's a tricky one. I think I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Okay. Michael says, what about dental care schemes?
Well, the Greens have done a lot with dental care. You probably know that one of the Greens' initiative was to move dental care into Medicare, and we've got a 5-year program starting off with children. Mm-hmm. From January next year, Australian kids will be able to go to the dentist and get basic dental care covered on their Medicare card.
So you're in favour, basically, of expanding dental care into Medicare generally? Because it does seem to be an odd exclusion. And I don't quite understand why. It's half out of the NHS in the UK as well. I don't quite understand
I think it's
that.
Historical and political because of the nature of the professions. But, you know, we have a situation where people turn up at hospital with, you know, inflamed teeth needing extraction. Mm-hmm. Children, young people, because they haven't had access to proper dental care.
Yeah. And leading on from there, Medicare generally, I noticed on the website you talk about lowering out-of-pocket costs, because that's seemingly getting out of hand these days for medical, medical expenses really getting out of hand. People having to pay large co-payments now.
Well, I think across the board, you know, our policies do favour, generous rebates and so on medical services. We've got a quite extensive health package and a strong preventative health package, I think.
Yeah, you're saying
there's strong priorities for the Greens.
Yes, well, you're saying you need to fund Medicare properly over the forward estimates, and the point being that Medicare was originally designed to be a universal health care system, and it's actually changed into a two-tier one. Mm. No, has it not?
And then there's also the issue of the possible privatisation of Medibank coming up too.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I use private healthcare. I'm lucky because my partner's employer provides private healthcare. And to be perfectly honest, I don't know what we do without it sometimes. Mm. But I do feel it's a bit unfair that I should have that advantage, or that anyone should have that advantage over anyone else.
It's sort of equal access to health is a huge issue, particularly in rural areas.
Now let's look a little bit at education. Yeah, you're very keen on building a prosperous future for young Australians, as the Greens say. Education's a big part of that. The Rudd government has committed to funding what used to be called the Gonski reforms, but they're doing it by pulling money out of universities.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good idea?
No, the Greens are opposed to that, and we're funding the Gonski reforms to a greater extent than Labor. We're actually in favour of the full Gonski recommendations, which is quite a substantial amount of more money than the Labor version, which people are calling Gonski light. And even with the full Gonski recommendations, which is what the Greens support, funding for education in Australia would still be below the OECD average.
Mm. Another one I wanted to bring up with you, and I don't know if it's an issue in Melbourne ports particularly, is the question of housing, and particularly social housing, because we don't seem to be building any.
No. And I think, public housing and housing affordability is a huge issue that hasn't got enough coverage. You probably know that City of Port Phillip has the highest amount of public housing of any local council, but we need to do more. And at the federal level, we've got policies like a prescribed level percentage of public housing and affordable housing in new development.
Let's look at what you won't do, because obviously all these things would be expensive.
Yep.
There's a lot of promises that the other parties have made or that the current government has put in place that, I mean, let's take paid parental leave for one, Tony Abbott's scheme. Would you save money by not going ahead with something like that?
We wouldn't support Tony Abbott's scheme, no. But can I just talk about funding our priorities?
Yes.
A lot of people may not know that part of the Greens' agreement with the minority government was to establish the Parliamentary Budget Office to cost political initiatives. And the Greens have, I think we're the only party who have had all our initiatives costed, and all our initiatives are online. And we've set out on among those initiatives how we would fund our initiatives.
Anything in particular you'd like to say to the listeners?
Yes, well, I'm a lawyer, and I was thinking about sort of issues of concern. My two profound experiences for me involving gay issues was, one, I don't know if many people remember George Duncan, the South Australian academic who was bashed and thrown into the River Torrens.
Yes, I do. And it's a famous case.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that as a young person. Mm. And, you know, that was really the case that, you know, the outrage following that case that led to the reform in South Australia. And then that had a profound effect on me. And then 2 years ago I was in Africa, and it was at the time of one of my kids was working there, and it was the time of the debate over the Ugandan bills, the first one. Coming back around. And two young gay guys from Melbourne visited and were travelling with us. And even in Tanzania, being gay is a life sentence. And it was very, it revealed to me as a mother, I was worried about these young boys, just the what it is like to live in a climate of fear. And so I think a lot of these initiatives we're trying to get through are really important. That's all I want to say.
Well, thanks very much, Anne. Thanks for joining us tonight. It's Anne Burrell, Greens candidate for Melbourne Ports.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
And this is your host, Doug Pollard. Now, later in the program, we'll talk to Melissa Starr, the Australian Sex Party candidate in Melbourne Ports. But before that, a consortium of gay groups asked the three main parties for their policies on a range of GLBTI issues. The results are in, and Corey Earlham joins us now with some of the details. Any surprises, Corey?
Doug, I am very pleased to say that the Australian Labor Party has committed to not supporting a national civil union scheme as a substitute for marriage equality in the next parliamentary
that's
term.
That's a good tick. That's a nice tick, yes.
So that was a little surprising.
And we've already had the commitment not to have a referendum, which is a good one as well.
That's also another good tick. The Australian Liberal Party has committed to maintain the protections in the Sex Discrimination Amendment Bill, which is another big tick.
Mm-hmm.
We have all parties talking about recognition of LGBTI people as a refugee on the basis of their sexual orientation, gender identity, which is great. And all parties are going to maintain the Australian guidelines on sex and gender.
So basically, it looks as though whatever happens, we're not going to be going backwards, at least.
Well, I'm not sure about that, because we haven't got a firm commitment on things like the coalition government, if they win, maintaining the active involvement of Australia on the international stage. We've done leadership positions, co-sponsoring bills in the UN, in the Commonwealth, and we wouldn't want to see a rollback on that.
No, because Bob Carr has taken a pretty pro-LGBTI stance and signed the pledge and all the rest of it.
As has Christine Milne.
Absolute silence, of course, from Tony Abbott and Julie Bishop.
I've got high confidence in Julie Bishop's ability to deliver in government, but we want to see it during the election campaign.
Got a message in here, by the way, talking about Tony Abbott and things in the election campaign. There are a lot of complaints about him today going to that school in Penrith that said homosexuality is an abomination.
As is gender identity.
And gender identity. Well, apparently there's a new article just gone up on the Age website that says homosexuality is no longer an abomination.
Well, it's not that it's no longer. It's saying they're going to review the words because it's not about whether or not the words... Sorry, it's not about the sentiment of the words. They still say that's right. They just think that they're outdated. And I'm sorry, but I think that, you know, telling children...
So they're just going to say it more nicely.
Well, possibly. And this is why we asked them about updating the curriculum during our survey so that we could see whether or not the parties would include an update to the curriculum. And the only party that said an absolute yes and they would absolutely mandate challenging bullying is the Australian Greens.
Now, that's something that I'm obviously, you know, I'm particularly interested in and I've been following for quite some time, to do with mental health and suicide among young people, and in particular about getting decent sex ed into schools, not just anti-bullying programs and that, but decent sex ed that covers gays and lesbians. What's the party's positions on that? Do we know?
Well, the party positions is that, you know, from a Labor perspective, they will talk about the fact that there's a school curriculum sexuality kit that individual schools can look at it and they can facilitate individual schools making their own decisions. But they're not talking about the need for, across the board nationally, there needs to be a consistent curriculum that everybody gets taught. Hmm. Homosexuality isn't an abomination.
Yes.
That if you are same-sex attracted, wear a condom. Even if you're not same-sex attracted and you're having sex, you should still wear a condom.
Yep.
And this is some of the complicated things that need to be addressed. Doug, you talk about this, and we'd often talk about this in a mental health context, and the really interesting thing is that all parties to a certain degree support the mental health initiatives, yet they haven't got a firm commitment on schools.
Well, as you know, I work on the Ministerial Advisory Committee for the Victorian Government on GLBTI issues.
We like disclaimer of conflict, yes.
Yes, disclaimer of conflict coming up here.
You're listening live with the liberal-loving Doug Pollard.
I don't think they'd agree with that description of me, not after some of the conversations I've had today. It is interesting that mental health has become a kind of conduit for getting people who are uncomfortable talking about sex to talk about sex ed and to talk about gay issues. But there is always still this tendency to want aftermarket solutions, if I can call it that, i.e. going in there and sorting out the mess after it's happened. They don't get the point that the anti-bullying programs and the sex ed are what stops the depression and the suicidal thought and everything else happening in the first place.
I don't think that's going to stop it alone, but you know, we're also on a really tight rope here. A really tight rope here that we make sure that we're not pigeonholing LGBTI issues into all about sex.
Indeed.
Yeah. So it needs to be across the curriculum. I want to see Oscar Wilde in history talked about as a proud, openly gay man. When we're talking about Alexander the Great in history, let's talk about his sexuality debate and whether there's some academic saying that he is and that he isn't. It should just be a natural part of discussions.
And I can see you looking there, sort of quite kind of perking up when he was talking about that in schools. Do you want to come in here?
I was on a completely different track. I was lucky enough to be in Iceland last year where they were discussing whether Njál, who was the hero of the Icelandic sagas, his sexuality. And
they're actually discussing this in schools?
No. In the local community, in the newspapers. And
a very respectful debate they have over there
they
in Iceland.
Do.
It's,
very
not, it's not an attacking debate that we have
no,
in Australia.
No, it was a discussion, not an aggressive, polarised debate.
We do tend to be terribly, terribly polarised here, don't we? Now, I've had a look through this document, Corey, to some extent, and what strikes me is that when you get to Labor, you get to the Greens, you get fairly specific responses. You probably get fewer weasel words from the Greens than you do from Labour. You get a certain amount of weaseling from Labour. Liberal never really directly address any of the questions you put to them. They provide kind of generalised, non-specific answers.
Well, I would say there's probably about 20% of the questions that are directly answered by the Liberals by not directly answering them, if you go through and analyse and cut and paste their response into certain sections. But there is
You have to read between the lines to kind of figure out what they might be hinting at.
We've tried to do that by putting the Liberals' response into those sections.
Yes,
but
I saw.
But overall, the largest response that the Liberals have received is response does not answer question in our assessment. But there are some really important things that we need to nail them to the wall on.
Okay. What's positive out of their responses then?
Leno, we've talked about positive. Let's talk about what we need to nail them to the wall on.
Okay.
We've got paid parental leave scheme. That is a publicly debated thing constantly throughout the election, and we don't have a firm commitment whether or not their scheme will include same-sex couples.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a firm commitment to them on HIV strategy. That's great. And they've made some good, you know, general words about LGBTI data, but we want to know whether they're actually going to do something or just allow something to be done. But perhaps the most concerning aspect that I see in the entire response is that there's no commitment to maintain the work that we've done in the area of aged care.
Mm.
There's no absolute commitment to maintain the National LGBTI Ageing Aged Care Strategy or the recognition as a special needs group. Now, they're not saying they will remove it, and I think that their intention is to keep it, but I'd like to see that in writing before the election.
Because obviously before an election is a good time to try and get them to put things in writing, and that's obviously why they're trying to avoid putting things in writing before the election. Overall, though, do you think things have improved? I mean, look at all three parties. Are we a long way further forward than we were at the last election? Are we more on the agenda than we used to be?
Well, Anne's probably going to find this a bit surprising, but actually the Greens have gone slightly backwards in the sense that they've had to be a little bit more considered in their response because they're becoming a major party. So whereas the Greens previously in the last two elections I've involved in would just say yes, 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 they've had to qualify some of those things, particularly where there's a financial impact to it. And I think that's a great sign of respect for the Greens growing up as a major political party in Australia. In terms of Labor, they've jumped miles ahead. There's far fewer no's in here than there has been previously. And likewise, in terms of the coalition, there are still not a great lot of responses, but there are certainly a lot less no's and a lot less negativity. I think the most respectful set of words I've ever seen out of the coalition in a survey response I want to read to you is, the coalition respects the deep feeling of communities on all sides of this issue when talking about marriage equality. And they declare that they don't have a position on marriage equality. They say at the 2010 election and earlier elections, the coalition supported the current definition. They're not saying it this one.
Well, they're not saying a lot of things this one. I mean, they're not taking a position on an awful lot of things this election, are they? I mean, they're going, yeah, we'll tell you later. We'll talk about it in the party room. We'll have to sort of see what the budget figures look like when we get in or whatever.
But yet Tony Abbott still won't tell us what he'll do in the party room.
Well, no. And Liberal candidates are very thin on the ground when it comes to trying to get them to talk on this program, Anne.
I was just going to say about the observation you made about the financial issue. That's a direct result of that initiative of having Treasury costing...
The PBO.
Yeah, the PBO. So the Greens have gone through all their policies.
I think it's fantastic.
And we've looked at, separated our aspirational policies and identified the ones we can cost.
And I think it's a really good sign that they've actually spent time thinking about it, as opposed to just a natural yes, because of course we're going to support it. There's actually some considered remarks behind it now, which is great.
So what you're doing now, Anne, I suppose, is you're having to look at prioritising things. You're having to look at, yeah, we can afford this, or we'd like this, but we can't afford it yet, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, some areas we're obviously aspirational as well, and, you know, it's probably not appropriate to try and cost those things, but where we can cost things, we're trying to as much as possible.
Now, Corey, this whole exercise, were you surprised at the depth of response you got? Because I remember previous exercises at trying to get parties to do this kind of thing. the response was pretty derisory. I mean,
I was in Amsterdam last election. I had to call back on an international call to yell at people in headquarters to give us a response, and all we got was a paragraph or two.
Yes, there was very little before. This time there seems to be an awful lot more information.
There is, and I think that's a credit to everybody who's been involved in LGBTI issues over the current parliamentary term. They've met across bipartisan meetings. It's the nature of having a minority government where you have to talk to all the parties to get something through. Mm. So I think there's a number of key issues in this document that weren't new to parties, that they had had some level of consideration on beforehand, and so they were able to make comments.
Is there anything in there that concerns you? Are there any sort of issues in there where you think we still have some educating to do across the board, not just any one party, but across all three parties?
Yeah, look, I, with all due respect, probably the Greens are the best at it, but I think we still have a long way to go on trans and gender diverse issues and on issues relating to intersex people, particularly around surgical intervention. Nobody in there gave an absolute outright support for preventing intersex children from basically having genital mutilation occurring to them against their will. Mm. And there's a lot of complex issues there around rights of parents, rights of child, what is the best outcome to do initially, and, you know, people are trying to do what they think is best, but then it turns out later on in life that it turned out to be not the best thing you could have chosen to do. So it's complex issues like that are still getting reflected upon by the parties.
Sure.
But I think, you know...
Let me give you a simple one. Yeah. Let me give you a simple one. I asked Anne earlier on and she didn't actually know. Full Medicare coverage for those living with gender dysphoria, including gender reassignment surgery. Where are the parties on that?
Okay.
Since we're into that topic.
The Liberals say nothing on that issue. And the Greens and Labor give a qualified response. Mm-hmm. And you'll see this on question 8.2 in the survey. There's a broad commitment that, you know, Medicare is meant to be used for providing affordable, safe access, cost-effective medical services by Labor, and that they will continue talking with the LGBTI community about how to address the barriers to access these things. The Greens say that they're committed to overcoming discrimination, vilification on various bases, and recognise the stigma on the basis of gender identity as a cause of psychological distress, and committing to overcome it. We commit to working with the next government to achieve this, but no outright commitment to surgery.
So, as you said about gender identity issues, trans issues, intersex issues, and that, it's still a work in progress.
Yep, and it just says to me that the community has made a big leap forward. There's the most I've ever heard, but that they need to talk more and explain more and educate more in the next parliamentary term.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, Corey. Thanks
for
joining
us tonight. Can I just say, Doug, if you want to come grill people about these questions...
Yes, I was just going to get to that. Go on, tell me about it.
You can come at 2:30 for a 3 o'clock start down at Commercial Road 119 at the D&M Bar.
On
Saturday the 31st of August. That's this Saturday, 2:30 for 3 o'clock. But if you can't make it, you can still go online to vglrl.org.au/LGBTI2013 to register a question that we'll ask on your behalf.
Right, so that's on Saturday down at the D&M Bar. Joining us now, we have Melissa Starr from The Sex Party. Evening, Melissa. Welcome to the programme.
Good evening. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. By the way, I must say congratulations on your launch today and the TV ad that came out. I had a good giggle at that. And if anyone wants to look to that online, I don't know if it'll win you a lot of votes, but it's certainly definitely good for a laugh. Now, you're new to politics.
Yes, this is my first ever federal election campaign.
And how are you finding it?
It's definitely it's a wonderful experience. It's very hard work, but I'm happy to be here and happy to support the party.
You had a bit of a rough ride in recent days over the suicide of a trans activist over in Western Australia, where you posted on Facebook that you thought her socialist friends might have taken better care of her. And I think it's fair to say a shitstorm descended upon you at that point. Do you regret saying that now?
Look, the comment was completely inappropriate. I was quite upset. A young woman, beautiful young woman, died. And it happens too often in our community, and it, you know, it needs to stop. And it's not a matter of blaming family or friends or whatever. We have to blame a system that doesn't give people enough hope that they want to stay around.
Yeah. Now, Amber was obviously she chose the extreme left of politics. She was involved with the Socialist Alliance. You've gone with the Sex Party. What's the Sex Party got that the other parties haven't got?
Well, we're a party that is both socially progressive and economically responsible. We believe in a modern Australia, and we believe that your life should be your choice.
You sound a bit like Malcolm Turnbull with that, being socially progressive and fiscally conservative. I was asking Anne earlier on about policies relating to refugees. Where does the Sex Party stand on the situation?
Well, we are a civil liberties party. We definitely do not believe that people who are not guilty of a crime should be locked up. This is a very difficult problem for Australia. I don't think there are any easy answers. I think that we definitely need a global solution, and I think that we need to look at what's worked around the world and what hasn't and find a rational way to solve the problem.
Yeah, well, there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of rationality about on this issue at the moment, unfortunately, certainly not from the majors. Now, I'm asking everybody the same question that Tess sent in earlier on. She said, can you ask about my old chestnut, pun intended, what about full Medicare coverage for those living with gender dysphoria, including gender reassignment surgery? Where's the Sex Party on this one?
I think that's a special case of a more general issue. We have anti-discrimination laws, which are getting better all the time, but there are still exceptions. Sex and gender diverse people are still treated differently. We should have the same access to medical treatment that we need as anybody else in the community. We should be confident of that, and we should build up the facilities and the knowledge and skills in Australia to be able to do that.
Because trans people are, trans and intersex people are, if you like, the last people on board the bus, in a sense, that gay men's rights have gone ahead by leaps and bounds, lesbian rights have come along behind, bisexual rights are now beginning to be talked about. We're really only now getting into the whole issue of taking care of the trans and intersex community, and your standing as a candidate is kind of part of that, isn't it, that
yes.
You now can.
Well, I am transsexual myself. Obviously, these issues are very close for me and very personal. I have a lot of volunteers on my campaign who are transgender or transsexual. I have one wonderful woman who has been waiting for about 30 years trying to save up for gender reassignment surgery, and she still isn't able to afford it, and it's really a heartbreaking situation.
But the more people... The more people like you who are visible and out in public life, the better it will get, I'm guessing, because that's what happened with gay issues.
Yes, I believe so. Part of what I'm doing, I want to send a message to every sex and gender diverse Australian that there is no limit to what you can try and there is no limit to what you can achieve.
If you put your mind to it, you can do things. Now, the other issue that people have been asking me about, it also relates to medical issues. That's things like Medicare, funding Medicare properly, and including dental care and so on in it. If you're being fiscally conservative, is the party in favour of Medicare and keeping or even expanding Medicare?
Well, I think that we have some opportunities to get some additional sources of revenue for our nation that we're not looking at. Right now, we have a $20 billion a year, that's $20 billion a year, tax exemption for the promotion of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe religion does have a place in our society. And as a party, we believe in freedom of religion as well as freedom from religion. But we have religious businesses. There are businesses that are owned by religions and they're competing in the marketplace without having to pay the same taxes that other businesses do. Mm. If we put them on a level playing field, that's already a significant additional source of revenue for our economy. And we have another policy which is relating to the war on drugs, and we would like to...
You're in favour of decriminalisation, broadly.
We're in favour of broad decriminalisation because we believe that people who are suffering from drug addiction should have a chance for treatment, not a criminal record.
So you see it more as a medical problem, as a health problem, rather than a policing problem, say?
Well, look, we've tried this. The world has tried this in many different ways over a long period of time. We've had, in the last century, prohibition in the United States, and everybody saw how that didn't work, and we are now seeing the same problem with the war on drugs. I believe that we need a solution, and that it should be a rational solution that actually works.
Well, if I can agree with you on that one, you were talking about sources of income earlier on for the government. If you stop spending money, this vast amount of money, on prohibition and tracking down illegal drugs and all that, and actually start treating them like tobacco and alcohol and reaping a tax tag from them, you could have a lot more money coming into the Treasury.
Well, just to make clear, the drug that we wish to tax and regulate and legalise is marijuana. And we have, I believe, about 2 million Australians who are taking marijuana, and I don't think any law that makes 10% of the population, or close to 10% of the population, into criminals is a good law.
Well, I mean, it invites disrespect for the law, doesn't it? It's not really enforced that heavily either on the end user. It's very inconsistent, isn't it?
It is, but it takes a whole section of the economy and then puts it into the hands of organised crime, when it could be, you know, it keeps the drugs on the street.
Mm. And also into the hands of petty crime too, people stealing to feed habits and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.